Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on taxes when we come back. Hey, listen to this. If I wanted to buy a motorcycle from you, and you priced the motorcycle at $1,200, and if I was in the 25% tax range, I'd have to go out and earn $1,600 so that I could pay $400 in income tax and net $1,200 to buy your motorcycle. Now, assuming that you're in the income tax range of 25% and you receive the $1,200, and you want to go out and buy something with the $1,200, well, you can only buy a $900 item because 25% of $1,200, remember, is $300. And so the government got $400 from me and then $300 from you. Now, let's suppose that you spend the balance, which is $675, to the next guy, and then he pays his 25% tax, and he passes it on to the next guy. That guy pays his tax, he's got $506.25, and then you pass it on to the next guy who pays 25% tax, and he's got $379, and the next guy pays 25% tax, and the next guy, and the next guy, and the next guy. Do you know that by the time that $1,600 passes through 10 transactions at 25%, the government has 95% of the $1,600 in 10 transactions? 95% in 10 transactions at 25%. If you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining. It's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Now remember, tax and status, the school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Hey, last time we were talking about this thing of the guardian ward relationship. Guardian ward relationships work among most people in most places most of the time. Even the judge who sits in court, who is the superior guardian, remember? Superior guardian is the judge. Even that judge has a guardian. Most judges that I know have social security numbers, marriage licenses, and live in society. And as a result of that, they're subject to social lady telling them how to raise their children and how to educate them. In fact, we are a society of professionals. Nobody is competent any longer here in America to take care of his own affairs. We rely upon bankers to guide and direct us in our banking affairs. And we rely upon lawyers to guide us and direct us in our legal affairs. Bankers are legal incompetence, and lawyers are money incompetence. And so the lawyer deposits his money in the bank so that the guardian of his money, the banker, can guide and direct the lawyer in the use of his money. And the banker is legally incompetent, and so he goes to the lawyer to have the lawyer guide and direct the banker's legal affairs. You know, if you stop and think about it, just about everybody in America is incompetent, at least in some degree, aren't they? And I took a look at the legal incapacities of Americans some 25 or 30 years ago, and I said, gee, has it always been this way, or was there ever a time when Americans were legally competent, fiscally competent, family competent, health competent? Were people ever able to take care of their own health? Were they able to take care of their own money? Were they able to take care of their legal affairs and their marital affairs and their child rearing and educational affairs and so on without all these paid professionals? And yeah, there was a time. There was a time. Way back in ancient times, back around Moses' time, out in the wilderness, when Moses got the Ten Commandments and the statutes and judgments, the creator of the universe insisted, required, as a matter of law, that everyone be 100% responsible, able, knowledgeable, and capable of taking care of themselves. By law, it was a requirement, and in many cases, punishable by death. It wasn't a kind or a gentle law. It was a law that required people to be responsible for their actions. And irresponsible people who committed irresponsible acts were required to pay for those irresponsible acts. So a man that goes out and loses control of his temper and kills somebody was taken out and stoned to death for murder. Today, you know, if somebody loses control of himself and he kills somebody, we take a look at that and we say, well, gosh, that isn't worthy of the death penalty. We're going to lock him up in prison and sentence the public at large to a $32,000 a year fine or penalty to lock this guy up in jail for the rest of his life. God didn't do that. He said the guy is worthy of death, and we're not going to lock him up and punish everybody else by storing him. We'll just kill him and bring him up in the resurrection at a later date. And so it was with insurance. You know, today people don't want to be responsible for their actions, and so they buy insurance, which is called limited liability. So we buy insurance and pay a $500 premium so that we don't have to be responsible for our irresponsible acts. When we cause somebody a damage, the insurance company will pay. This spreads. This is called equitable loss spreading. It spreads the loss over a large number of people paying in their $500 so that the insurance company can take a portion, you know, a percentage of that as their profit for administering the program. We call that insurance. People love it. People love insurance, and they buy it, and they revel in it, and they use it all the time. Of course, insurance companies, especially down in New Orleans, you know, they got a little bit uppity down there, and they won't pay you people down there. You paid your premiums, but now that you've had this hurricane and lost your house, they won't pay you for it. Did you notice that? Yeah, so the insurance people, you know, aren't exactly honest, are they? Bankers aren't exactly honest. In fact, if you take a look at our whole society, you find that doctors aren't 100% honest, and insurance brokers and real estate people are. You know, our society is not made up of people who don't steal. We don't practice thou shalt not steal. Honesty is the best policy. Truthfulness. And of course, that's what morality is all about. And you can't have freedom without morality. And he who is governed best is governed least, our founding fathers believed, and they espoused that and taught it to us and sent us on our way and said our republican form of government is the system of government that we think will give us the greatest liberties and freedoms with the least amount of restrictions, costs, and taxes. Now, over the years, we Americans have become less and less competent, less and less able to take care of ourselves, and this is evidenced by the fact that we buy more and more insurance and go to more and more doctors, and that we go to more and more lawyers, and we deposit our money in the bank, and we write checks, and we have government agencies that give us farm price supports, because as farmers, we're unable to farm and sell our produce and make a living at it, and so we need government to help us. Farmers will tell you that if it weren't for price supports, we couldn't make it. And that's because farmers are incompetent, unable to manage their farms, and so they need the Department of Agriculture. People get sick. Well, I need Medicare. I need this prescription drug program or I couldn't make it. Well, obviously, then you're incompetent and unable to take care of your medical needs, unable to take care of your own bodies, and so therefore you need Social Security. And therefore you need an income tax to pay for that. And that's just where reality is at. And the Supreme Court recognized that back in 1905 in this case we were discussing called Hale versus Hinkle, in which an individual, they started off with individuals, and they said the rights of these individuals now are pretty good. If you think about it, the individual may stand upon his constitutional rights as a citizen. He's entitled to carry on his private business in his own way. His power to contract is unlimited. He owes no duty to the state or to his neighbors to divulge his business or to open his doors to an investigation so far as it may tend to criminating. He owes no such duty to the state since he receives nothing therefrom. I told you to underline that. Beyond the protection of his life and property, of course. His rights, that is, the individual's rights, are such as existed by the law of the land antecedent to the organization of the state, and can only be taken from him by due process of law and in accordance with the Constitution. Constitutional rights. Among his rights are a refusal to incriminate himself, the immunity of himself and his property from arrest, property, the holy grail of law, or seizure except under a warrant of the law. A warrant, Fourth and Fifth Amendment protections. He, the individual, owes nothing to the public so long as he does not trespass upon their rights. All right, so there's the story on an individual. Now, the court went on and said, upon the other hand, the corporation is a creature of the state. So the Supreme Court in 1905 delineated between individuals and corporations and said, here's the distinctions between them. So on the one hand, individuals have constitutional rights and protections. They're competent and able to manage their own affairs. And they owe nothing to the public so long as they do not trespass upon the public's rights. Now, on the other hand, the corporation is a creature of the state. The corporation is presumed to be incorporated for the benefit of the public, from each according to his ability and to each according to his need, boys and girls. Corporations are a part and parcel with communist philosophy and a part and parcel with the 7th and 8th planks to the Communist Manifesto. The corporation receives certain special privileges and franchises and holds those privileges and franchises subject to the laws of the state and the limitations of its charter. The corporation's powers are limited by law. Corporations can make no contracts not authorized by their charters, and corporate rights to act as a corporation are only preserved to it so long as it obeys the laws of its creator. There is a reserved right in the legislature to investigate its contracts and to find out whether the corporation has exceeded its powers. And it would be a strange anomaly to hold that a state, having chartered a corporation to make use of certain franchises, could not, in the exercise of its sovereignty, inquire as to how these franchises had been employed and whether they had been abused, and demand the production of the corporate books and papers for that purpose. I had a student in here some years back now, and the IRS came to him, and they said of him, we want your records and books. And he said, well, you can't have them. I've got constitutional rights. And he came to school. And while he was in school, he said to me, I've got constitutional rights. They didn't come up with a Fourth Amendment warrant. And I said to the man, do you have a Social Security number? And he said, well, yes, of course I do. I said, well, the state doesn't need a warrant. You've already given them consent. You're acting in a corporate capacity. And under Hale versus Hinkle, the state has every right to come in and investigate that corporate charter or franchise. And he said, but I didn't go down and incorporate. I said, you entered a corporate capacity when you signed up for Social Security. Now, the man happened to have a business, and I said, do you have a business license? And he said, no. And I said, well, then you're in violation of the law because the law requires that you have a business license because you're operating in trade, commerce, business, and industry affecting the public interest. And you come under the Commerce Clause of Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. And government has every right to regulate and control commerce. Now, boys and girls, there's a spider web out here. And the government has spun a spider web. And there's this practice among spiders that they don't kill their victims. They spin a web, they catch their victim, then they truss up the victim and leave him there alive. And they come by and they suck some juices out of him. And then they go about their business and they come back a little later and they suck some more juices out of him. They don't kill their victim. Not right away. And they keep coming back and coming back. Now, finally, the victim dies. The victim only has so much juice. And when they've sucked the juices out of this fly or out of this victim, this bug, you know, finally the bug dies. Now, government comes along and they suck taxes out of you. They don't kill you. They don't destroy you. They don't put you out of business. They just come along and they suck on you and suck on you and suck on you until finally you expire. You go bankrupt. You go out of business like Montgomery Ward or like Buggy Whips. Government creates policies that benefit government, benefit certain segments of society at certain times. And that's why you have lobbying. You know, the pharmaceutical industry goes to Washington, and they're looking for privileges and franchises and exemptions and laws. And so they send their lobbyists in to bribe the congressmen to enact laws, commercial laws, that benefit the pharmaceutical industry. And then the wood products industry, they go in to get Congress to enact laws. And then the healthcare professionals, the doctors and the hospitals, they get Congress to enact laws. And all of these laws, of which now there's about 2.5 million of these laws being added to at the rate of 47 pages a day at the federal level. These laws are economic laws. They're commercial laws. They're designed to suck the juices out of their victims. Now, you need to stay out of these spider webs. And that's why God told you not to make any covenants or contracts with these foreign and alien gods. That's why the first commandment tells you, you shall have no other gods beside me. You shall have no other sovereigns that you bow down to worship, that you obey their laws, but me. You practice my law and to hell with the laws of New York. That's what he told you. Now, people today would say, well, I can't do that. Why the government of New York would come out with the policemen, highway patrolmen, and the tax collectors and put me out of business and do all kinds of bad things to me. And you're not just whistling Dixie there, Charlie. You betcha they would. They'd do all of that. And that's because when people come to school here, they're not freemen. You see, they're already slaves on a Mississippi plantation. And I walk in and I'm a free man and I'm just as black as they are, and they look at me and they say, how can you being black? Or they can look at me and say, hey, how can you being white in America avoid the income tax? Driver's licenses and business licenses and all of these regulations and controls. And it's because I obey God and keep his commandments. I practice the Ten Commandments instead of practicing the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's the only difference. Now, for openers, you can't just start off by getting evangelistic zeal, giving the finger to the state of New York and saying, well, I'm not going to pay the income tax anymore. No. Now, if you're in public business, you have to pay the income tax. If you've got a social security number, you need to pay the income tax. You know, if you've got a social security number, you need to pay your social security taxes. If you've got a bank account, you need to be regulated and controlled by the banking laws of your state. No, what I'm suggesting is, have you thought about, let's just take the banking laws of your state. What if you closed your bank account? I know that this is far out, and it's really weird, and it's going to boggle your mind here, but just think about it for a second. If you closed your bank account, terminated the contract, of course, you'd need to learn how to count first and learn how to take care of your own money first and learn how to be fiscally responsible first. I mean, I'm not suggesting that you do this without learning how to manage your money, because it's obvious that if you've got a bank account, you can't manage your money, and that's why you've got this banking guardian to take care of your money. But I'm just thinking, what if you could learn how to be fiscally responsible, take care of your own money, close your bank account? Has it occurred to you that you would no longer be subject to the banking laws of the state because you're no longer in a corporate capacity with the bank? Well, all of a sudden, you would have sovereignty over one aspect of your life. You would have control over your money. Now, of course, you still owe the income tax, and you still have to pay, you know, all of your Social Security taxes and so on. But I'm just pointing out that now, if you're using Federal Reserve notes and credit cards and checks and all of these unjust weights and balances, stocks and bonds and so on, let's take it a step further, and let's pretend, for the sake of our argument, that you abolished the use of unjust weights and balances and did business in gold and silver coin. We might even go a step further. We might even rescind our Social Security account. You know, close our account. For instance, let's suppose that you've got a credit card account with Sears, and you keep getting bills every month, and maybe you're behind on your payments, and they're starting to send you some very testy letters, you know, and they're calling you names and they're threatening you in one thing and another. Has it ever occurred to you that maybe if you'd pay off that debt, cut up that credit card, send it back, terminate your contract with Sears, that you wouldn't get any more of those nasty letters from Sears? This, of course, presupposes that you could replace that credit card with fiscal sanity and responsibility and pay your debts at law with gold or silver coin or wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil or something, and that you could live within your means. All of a sudden, you know, you're starting to think like a free man. If you could learn some health tips or tricks so that you didn't get sick. I know I have a granddaughter and she was raised by her mother, and her mother is not the sharpest marble in the drawer to start with, and this granddaughter just had a baby the other day, and this granddaughter is young. That's her saving grace. We know we can't be too harsh on the young, but she's just about as incompetent as any young mother that I have ever heard of, met, or come in contact with. I mean, she can change the baby's diapers and she can breastfeed it, and she can do some of those fundamental things. But anytime this child develops anything, she has to rush him off to the pediatrician because she's a medical incompetent, just beside herself, not knowing what to do next. That's why I always thought that before you have babies, wouldn't it be good if you learned a little something about health, nutrition, and medicine, herbs, vitamins, and minerals, so that when this baby comes along, you'd be in a better position to take care of it. And the problem that we have here in America is that young women today are so incompetent by the time they have babies. I mean, they haven't got a clue as to what they do next, and that's why they have to have social ladies, and they have to have pediatricians, and they have to have guidance, and they have to have laws and controls and WIC and all of these programs over here. They couldn't make it. Well, I'm not down on WIC, and I'm not down on social lady per se. I mean, I can readily understand that incompetent people need guardians. What I'm thinking here is that, you know, wouldn't we be happier, healthier, longer-lived people if we were more competent? Wouldn't it be cheaper in the long run? Instead of hiring social ladies and hiring all of these paid professionals, maybe if we could do more for ourselves, it would be a lot cheaper in the long run. Now, one of the things that I notice here is the complaints that people have about the banking industry. They complain about all of the high interest on the credit cards and all of the charges and costs that are associated with banks and banking services. Now, I'm not complaining about Bank of America's excessive 27% interest rate on their Visa card when you max it out and you can't make your payments. I'm not complaining about that. I'm not complaining about restrictions on checking accounts and savings accounts and the rest of it, because I don't have any banking connections at all. And that's because I'm financially responsible and I can take care of my own money. I don't need a financial guardian to take care of my money. Now, in the times past, I did. I had bank accounts, so I couldn't take care of my money. I remember a guy, preacher, I can't think of his name right now. If it comes to me, I'll tell you who it was. Oh, yes, I can tell you. The guy's name was Dixon, Greg Dixon. And he had a church over in Indianapolis, Indiana, and this church was a big church. I mean, I went in that church, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It had seating for 3,000 people in the seat. I mean, you could walk in there, 3,000 people could be listening to Pastor Dixon give a sermon on a given Sunday. Well, I was running Barrister's Inn out in Boise, Idaho at the time, and Pastor Dixon, or one of his aides, I forgot who it was now, had a problem. The state came in and took, I think it was $13,000 out of their account for non-payment of taxes. And he got real upset. He's talking about separation of church and state, and he's talking about the church and 501c3 tax exemption and all of these things, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And so and he wanted to talk to me about it, and so he sent me an airplane ticket, and so I flew out to Indianapolis, Indiana, to talk to him about the government and freedom of religion and free exercise and the First Amendment and one thing and another. And so he picked me up out there at the airport, and we went to lunch. We were sitting there at lunch, and he told me about this $13,000 that they took out of his bank, and he told me about how big the church was and how on Sundays they take in $26,000. We got 3,000 people in there. It's just divided out. See how much you people give. $26,000, and if there was a full house divided by $3,000, well, they gave $8.66 per person per Sunday. And he told me about how they had to have an armored car pick up the receipts on a Sunday offering to take it to the bank. And I was really impressed. I'd never seen 3,000 seats in a church before. And I didn't know that they took in $26,000 every Sunday, sometimes more, I guess. And they had a private school there. They had a high school. They had a grammar school there, and I think they even had a preschool. It was a big operation. And then they had a lot of employees. And these employees had social security numbers. And the church had a 501c3 tax exemption. Pastor Dixon had a marriage license. Very normal people. Very good people, nice people, normal people, everyday garden variety Americans who believe they have rights and constitutional protections and one thing and another. And so while we were sitting there at the table, I happened to have $10,000 in cash in my inside coat pocket. In those days when I was traveling, sometimes I'd need some money, and so I happened to have a little with me. And so I asked him this question. I said, why did you have $13,000 in the bank? And he looked at me like I was stupid. He said, why you have to have a bank to put $13,000 in. Why, you can't just walk around on the streets with $13,000 in your pocket. And when he said that, I reached in my pocket and I pulled out the $10,000 and I said, well, you're probably right about $13,000, but I've got $10,000 here. And I can carry $10,000 in my pocket on the streets. And he was so shocked. He was just dumbfounded. He just couldn't believe his earballs. And he said, "Why, aren't you afraid that somebody is going to rob you?" And I looked around and I said, "Shh. Don't talk too loud here, Mr. Dixon, but you know, there's only two people in Indianapolis that know that I'm walking around on the streets with $10,000. It's just you and me. And no thief would suspect me of having $10,000 in my pocket unless you told them. So I'm pretty safe. I'm pretty safe as long as I keep it private and personal and I don't tell anybody." And I said to him, "Now my first mistake here is in telling you, because now the secret is out, because a secret's only good when one person knows it, and it's no longer a secret when two people know it. And so I would appreciate it if you'd help me maintain the balance of my secret by not telling anybody else." He assured me that he wouldn't tell. Now, the point I'm making is, and the point that I was making for Mr. Dixon, that when you put $13,000 in the bank, that's not a secret. That's not personal. That's not private. And especially when you're dealing with $13,000 of public money, when you're dealing with $13,000 of Federal Reserve notes, see, those are regulated and controlled. Those are unjust weights and balances. And I didn't rail on the good pastor there about why don't you obey God and keep His commandments. I just pointed out to him that the civil law regulates and controls that. And that maybe if he would close his bank accounts, he'd have a lot more privacy. And maybe if he could learn how to take care of his $26,000. And he assured me that he couldn't. And I said, "Well, then that answers your question. Because if you can't take care of $26,000 a week coming into your church, and you have to have the bank do it for you, and the government is going to know about it because it's not private, then anytime they want to, they can come in and take the $13,000, can't they? And it may well be, Mr. Dixon, that you will never become financially responsible. And therefore, you will always need a money guardian to take care of your money. But if at some time in the future you could get to a point where you could take care of your own money without a guardian, and if you could keep that secret, you'd probably never have government steal another $13,000 from you." Now, later on, they stole more from him, and they actually put him out of business and sold his church. Now, that's how pervasive government regulation and control can become. And when you have franchises, remember, under Wickard and under Hale versus Hinkle, government regulates that which they subsidize. 501c3 tax exemption is a subsidy that all of you preachers out there want, desire, have signed up for, and the controls, the regulation, and the taxes that are associated with it go with the territory. So if you want freedom of religion, you get rid of 501c3. If you want freedom in economics, you get rid of your checking and banking accounts. If you want freedom in your law, in your legal status, you get rid of your lawyer. I got to give you a mid-course reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. That's, again, area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about taxes, and there was a lady by the name of Rachel Templeton. Some of you out there may remember Rachel Templeton. She didn't file her tax returns some years back. She's dead now, but she didn't file her tax returns. And as a result of that, the government came against her, and they jumped on her, and they just raised hell with her and put her in jail and did all these bad things. One time I was up in Hillside, Illinois, and she came up. She lived in Indiana, and she came up to Hillside and listened to me. And she took exception to what I was saying in one of my seminars. And I was pointing out some of these facts that I'm pointing out to you. This is the way the tax system works, and the guardian-ward relationship, and one thing and another. She had a different belief, a different concept, a different ideology concerning the income tax. She thought that the income tax was unconstitutional, or that the income tax was illegal and unlawful for other reasons. The income tax didn't apply to her. Now, this presupposes that the government, that is the Congress, has enacted statutes, judgments, and the courts have issued judgments that are in opposition to the law, and that you can go to the Roman civil law and that you can obviate your tax liability or your tax responsibilities under the civil law by going to the civil law, going to the Uniform Commercial Code, or going to Title 26 of the U.S. Code, and that the IRS is applying the law incorrectly, and that the judges and the courts are applying the laws incorrectly. And that if I'm just real smart, I could go in there and I could defend using the statutes under Title 26 or the statutes under Title 18 and defeat these charges that are being brought against me. Well, let me take you back a few years and see if we can understand how this game is being played. You see, the tax protest movement got started in its earliest inception, in its modern form, by a fellow named A.J. Porth in 1944. A.J. Porth. And A.J. Porth recognized that there were some things about the income tax which were un-American, that were unnatural, that violated our Constitution and our constitutional guarantees. He didn't grasp and understand the connecting link between Social Security and the income tax, or Federal Reserve notes and unjust weights and balances in the income tax. But as an American, and as an American who had lived in the era when we had gold coin, he could see by 1944 something was amiss. So he went into the courts, and he went to prison. And many, many people agreed with A.J. Porth and said, there's something wrong. Now, I agreed that there was something wrong, but whatever was wrong wasn't necessarily illegal, unlawful, or unconstitutional. And I pointed that out to you in Schaefer versus Carter. Because in the Schaefer Doctrine over here, the court went on to say that this argument, upon analysis, resolves itself into a mere question of definitions, and it has no legitimate bearing upon any question raised under the federal Constitution. I'm going to read that again because you might have missed that. The court said this argument concerning the income tax, upon analysis, resolves itself into a mere question of definitions, and it has no legitimate bearing upon any question raised under the federal constitution. Boys and girls, the income tax is not a constitutional issue. Who said so? The United States Supreme Court in 1920. Well, what about all these tax protesters and patriots out here who are raising constitutional issues and constitutional questions and fervently believe? I mean, it's like religion. You know, I believe that the income tax is unconstitutional. Well, okay. You know, let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But if you run that by the judge in court, well, you're the defendant. You'll go to jail. You won't pass go, and you will not collect your $200. Well, what about all these tax protesters and patriots out here who are raising constitutional issues and constitutional questions and fervently believe? I mean, it's like religion. You know, I believe that the income tax is unconstitutional. Well, okay. I mean, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But if you run that by the judge in court, well, you're the defendant. You'll go to jail. You won't pass go, and you will not collect your $200. Well, if it isn't constitutional, what is it? So it's a mere question of definitions. And the definition is it constitutional? And the answer is no. Is it unconstitutional? And the answer is no. Well, what is it? And the answer is, it's contractual. It's contractual. You signed a contract. You agreed to it. Nobody forced you into the income tax. So when they told you that the income tax was voluntary, they're not lying to you. It is. It's voluntary. Just like military service is voluntary. But boys and girls, once you sign that military enlistment contract, what goes on in the Army from that point forward has nothing to do with voluntary. It's all mandatory. Now, the income tax is voluntary. And they come to you and they first say to you, would you like to have all these benefits? And you say, well, yes, I would. And so you go down and sign up for Social Security. Once you sign up for Social Security, what goes on from that point on is not voluntary, it's mandatory. It's mandatory that you file a tax return. It's mandatory that you pay taxes. It's mandatory that you file and that you do all of these things and follow all these regulations that are set down. When you go in there and you sign up for the PIC program or the land bank or soil set aside or something else, you farmers out there, that's voluntary. But what goes on after you've signed that agreement is no longer voluntary, it's now mandatory. Don't get mad now at the government officials who are simply enforcing the regulations that you have agreed to. It's contractual. It's not unconstitutional, and it's not constitutional. It's extra constitutional. It's contractual. So the lady, in this case, her name here now slips my mind here. I got to look at it again. Templeton, Rachel Templeton. She goes into the Court of Appeals, and I assume it was the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals for Indiana. And here's what the Court of Appeals said in the last paragraph. They said, finally, we address Templeton's second argument, in which she claims that she is not a person liable or a taxpayer, as those terms are defined by the Internal Revenue Code and the relevant case law, and as a result that the provisions of Section 6103 do not apply in her case. We agree with the district court that this claim is patently frivolous, as Templeton does not dispute that she is a citizen of the United States, and because the code imposes an income tax on every individual who is a citizen or resident of the United States. and it would clearly contradict the plain meaning of the term to conclude that Congress did not intend that Templeton be considered a taxpayer, as the term is used throughout the code. Now, if you're a citizen of the United States of America, boys and girls, you're a taxpayer. You don't have to have a Social Security number, and you don't have to have a taxpayer identification number. Now, if you don't want to pay the income tax, has it ever occurred to you to stop having income? I know, it's kind of a crazy idea, but, I mean, think about it for a minute. If you didn't want to pay property tax, and you didn't own any property, shucks, you wouldn't have to pay any property tax. So if your goal is to pay property tax, then you should buy some real property. If your goal is to avoid paying property tax, then maybe you shouldn't own any real property. Now, my goal in life is not to pay any income tax, so I avoid income like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Now, most people make their livings by having income. It's the very common, predominant methodology whereby people live their lives today is with income. But boys and girls, before the income tax, there was life. There was life in the United States of America before income tax. There was life in the United States of America before income. And I submit to you that there will be life in the United States of America after the income tax and after income, when it no longer exists. So I looked at that years ago and I said, you know, maybe I should apply a different rule of thumb here in trying to live my life. Now, I picked this up years ago in Astoria, Oregon, during the war. They were trying to scramble. They had about 30 or 40 airplanes in this huge blimp hangar at Astoria, Oregon. And it took about 30 or 40 minutes to get these 30 or 40 airplanes out of this hangar and scrambled. And in those days, remember the early days of World War II, we were expecting an invasion of the west coast of the United States from the Japanese. And so, with all of this war fever, and they had these fighter planes, and they were trying to get these fighter planes out of the hangar. Some bright young man woke up one day and he said, you know, trying to get the airplanes out of the hangar takes 40 minutes, but how long would it take to get the hangar off of the airplanes? So what they did was they jacked the hangar up and they put it on tracks. And then they put some motors on some wheels, and then they discovered that they could run the hangar on the tracks, the full length of the hangar, which was several hundred feet long. They could run this thing on the tracks in 5 minutes. They could take the hangar off of the 30 or 40 airplanes in 5 minutes, but it would take 30 or 40 minutes to get 30 or 40 airplanes out of the hangar through the doors on the ends. And that's what triggered my imagination. And I said, what if we tried to live our lives without income? Whatever this income is, remember, it was Diefendorf versus Galate. It said, income is something. So it didn't even tell you what income was. But whatever this something is, it comes from property. So I looked that up, and I'll share this one with you. Here's what the Supreme Court said that this something is. Let's suppose that we've got a tree, and this tree is producing fruit, and the tax rate is 10%, and the tree produces 100 bushels of fruit. How much tax do we owe on the fruit? And the answer is 10 bushels. All right, so now let's imagine that the next year isn't so good and the tree only produces 50 bushels of fruit. So, how much is the tax? Well, the answer is 5 bushels. 10% of 50 is 5 bushels. Okay. Third year. The tree is really, really stressed out from the drought and it doesn't produce any fruit at all. How much is the tax on this tree? And the answer is zero. And you can't cut off two limbs, because that's a direct tax on the property itself. You see, boys and girls, the tree is the property, and the property cannot be taxed because it's a right. But we can tax what comes from the property, and that's fruit. So what we need is property that doesn't produce any fruit. Then we wouldn't have to pay the income tax. I know, it's kind of a wild concept, but before there was income, and before there was income tax, there was life. Now, the Congress says that they tax what comes from the Commerce Clause. So if we could own property outside of commerce, and there's this obscure old-timey case from 1923 called Wolf Company versus Industrial Court. Wolf Company versus Industrial Court. I'll tell you that story next time, but I wanted to tell you the balance of this Rachel Templeton case, because we covered it a little earlier. Do you notice this word citizenship? Did you catch that citizenship? Well, let's flip over here to page 9. I'm going to read to you again this little story over here, the 16 connecting links. And remember when we looked at the nexus, the civil law and income, like mortgages and Social Security and Federal Reserve notes, number 16 was citizen. Now, a citizen of the United States, and because the code imposes an income tax on every individual who is a citizen or resident of the United States. Now, you know, your citizenship comes from being born here in the United States. And so your government gives you, grants you, imposes upon you, insists that you take citizenship. Why? Well, because it makes you a taxpayer. Well, it makes all the sense in the world. You know, the last thing in the world a government would want is people living in their dormitory without paying rent. Think about it. Every country grants you citizenship by being born there. And they want you to be a citizen, because if you're a citizen and you work, you pay taxes. Because citizens pay taxes to their sovereign. It comes from 1 Samuel chapter 8, remember? When we gave God the finger and said we want a king like all the nations around us. And God said, hey, that's not one of your brighter moves. Said that's kind of dumb. See, our citizenship is in the kingdom of heaven. Our citizenship is with our God, our Creator. But you know, your daddy said, if your daddy was like my daddy, said, well, to hell with this religious nonsense. I want real citizenship for my kid. And so my daddy got me a birth certificate. Gave me real citizenship in the United States of America. But he also gave me a liability called income tax. So, my daddy meant well, I'm sure, and your daddy probably meant real well, too. But, hey, listen, you know, I don't make these laws. I'm just a reporter. I'm just here to tell you. Rachel Templeton was a citizen dealing in Federal Reserve notes, checks, and credit cards with a Social Security number and said, I'm not a taxpayer. And the court said, well, that's patently frivolous. Well, boys and girls, we have to comply with all the laws of the United States, all the laws of the state that you live in, and all the law of God at the same time. And you know, if you practice the law of God to the exclusion of the state of Indiana or New York, you won't have any income. You'll have property, but you won't have income. And you'll be practicing the Ten Commandments, but you won't be practicing the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. And you won't have citizenship in the United States, you'll have denizenship. Now, you know, some of these terms, I'm sure, are a little heady, and you're probably sitting there saying, well, what in the hell is a denizen? What's a patriarchal family, or individual responsibility, or a warehouse receipt, or a CHEQUE? You know, that's part and parcel with education, and you should have learned that when you were in high school. But you'll notice that you went to the public schools, and the public schools are government schools, and the government isn't going to teach you any competing system. They're going to teach you what you need to know to be a good citizen, taxpayer, and a good bondservant of the United States of America. They're not going to teach you anything about expatriation. They're not going to teach you how to avoid the income tax. They're not going to teach you the Ten Commandments, because the Ten Commandments are the exact opposite to the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's why they're banned from the public schools. It doesn't have anything really to do with morality. It has to do with money. So government is going to teach you what you need to know to be a servant, a bondservant of the United States. Florida, New York, California, Washington, Oregon. Makes all the sense in the world. Germans learn how to be loyal citizens of Germany and taxpayers paying their taxes in Germany. And Frenchmen, they learn how to be loyal Frenchmen and taxpayers in France. Well, California, Washington, Oregon, they're not dumb, you know. And they're going to teach you what you need to know. And that's what they've taught you. Now, there's last factor over here I wanted to bring to your attention. There was a case came down in the Ninth Circuit in which a federal appeals court Thursday overturned a Mesa, Arizona man's federal conviction of possessing 5 machine guns. This guy's got 5 machine guns. He's convicted for having these machine guns. And the Circuit Court of Appeals overturns his conviction. A 3-judge panel of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals of San Francisco reversed the conviction, ruling that the congressional ban does not apply to homemade machine guns and their parts because they were never in the stream of commerce. Commerce. The Commerce Clause. Article 1, Section 8. That's where the income tax comes from, boys and girls, commerce. Federal Reserve notes are commerce. Credit cards are commerce. Social Security is commerce. Rent is commerce. Commerce is described in the Bible as Canaanite trafficking. And I know in every city and hamlet in America, you've got a chamber of commerce, a chamber of Canaanite traffickers. Strictly prohibited in the scripture, a violation of the law of God. But you know, that's not the only thing that we violate as it relates to the laws of God. If God made a law, you can rest assured, you can be sure that we will violate it. You know, God says, thou shalt not steal, and we're out here busily stealing in any way that we can, including unjust weights and balances. God says, thou shalt not commit adultery. That's poppycock. We're out here committing adultery. It's a part of our national sport. Same thing is true here with commerce. You know, he says, we don't want to participate in commerce, boys and girls. And we said, God, you don't know what you're talking about. We're going to cut a fat hog in the back. We're going to involve ourselves in commerce. So next time, the last program in the series here, we'll take up Wolf Company versus Industrial Court, and I'll show you this thing called private business versus public business, submachine guns, and transporting marijuana, like Almeida Sanchez. Remember, they weren't engaged in a regulated enterprise. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, georgegordon.org. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And for more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, talking about taxes. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.